At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Litterine. If you're out there on Twitter, give John a follow, please, at John Litterine. That's J-O-N-L-I-T-T-E-R-I-N-E. You can follow me at Jakeski52. It's been over a month, John, since we've been at it, but today we're going to be making our picks for the biggest fights at UFC 215 live from Edmonton on Saturday. But like I said, John, it's been a month. How have you been? Did you watch Mayweather-McGregor, and what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm good. I did watch it, and I guess my thoughts were a lot like everybody else. I thought McGregor did better than most thought. I think a large part of that that's not being talked about was the fact that for the first few rounds, Mayweather essentially let him take over in the sense that he just let him punch himself out and didn't throw virtually anything of his own. And you can't really knock him. In the end, the strategy worked. McGregor got pretty tired and couldn't sustain his pace for the entire fight. But yep, all in all, a guy who had never had a boxing match fighting one of the best pound-for-pound fighters ever in any division, I thought he did fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fighter's a fighter. It's funny, I mentioned in my preview, I don't know if you're a Simpsons fan, John, but I made a Homer Simpson analogy that maybe, he stands there, punches himself out, and then he's opened up after that. So it's not exactly what happened. You, of course, get smaller fighters and whatnot, but pretty close. I mean, Conor got tired. He's never fought more than 25 minutes before, and I absolutely give him credit for standing in there. It was a fun fight to watch, especially for those first couple rounds that got you thinking, maybe Conor can do something here. So I think anyone that paid for it doesn't really have a complaint.
No, it was definitely, the whole thing was better than virtually anybody thought it would be. And Mayweather especially has a reputation of being in boring fights sometimes. As great as he is, it's not always that entertaining to watch. But this was. Anybody who laid it out or anybody who paid for cover at their bar or their restaurant certainly got their money's worth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, that's not the only news to have taken kind of the MMA world by storm. Right around that same time, we got some news that John Bones Jones has tested positive again for a banned substance. I turn the ball, or it's a lot more syllables in there, but basically an oral steroid. And now there's a whole lot of investigation to be done, and if this is true and it's a second offense, we're looking at maybe 4 years ban if he even comes back to the octagon at all. I mean, what were your thoughts when you first saw the news?
I want to say I'm surprised, but given his history, can you really be surprised?
Yeah. No, I can't. I mean, at this point, it's happened so many times that
you essentially can't trust the guy anymore. And like you said, if this turns out to be true and they tack on whatever suspension is forthcoming, they'll obviously look at his past and, you know, know that he has a history of all this kind of stuff. And you're right. He's going to be looking at probably upwards of, you know, 3 or 4 years. And he's at the prime of his career now, but he's not going to be after 3 or 4 years of competing. And
it'll be about 34, 35. And, you know, that's not completely out of the question, but it's still after that long of a layoff. I can't imagine someone staying that mentally strong and being ready to come back at that point.
No, and I mean, this is a guy who I think it's safe to say has as much physical talent as anyone who has really ever competed in the sport, but he can't stay out of his own way. And, you know, could this be a case where the UFC finally just says, you know, I can't do this anymore. He serves a suspension and he wants to keep fighting and find, you know, Bellator's around in 4 years or 3 years or whatever it is, and he wants to go there. But
I'm sure Ryzen's got a place for him overseas.
Yeah. So, you know, if he just gets a long suspension when it's all over, if he decides he still wants to fight, you know, somebody will find a place for him because he's a big name and big names draw money. But as far as him being involved in, you know, the title picture in, you know, the biggest organization in the world, if this is true, it's over.
Yeah, maybe he'll fight Brock Lesnar after all, but at WrestleMania instead of in an octagon. You never know. It looks like Rousey's taking that route. But I've described to my non-MMA friends, when I try to describe John Jones and what the situation is, I basically say, all right, take Lance Armstrong, one of the greatest, you know, athletes at his sport of the generation. Take Lance Armstrong, you know, subtract all the charity work, because I don't count the court-ordered stuff as charity work. Throw in a felony hit and run and a few cocaine benders, and then you have John Jones. It's essentially the analogy that I try to make.
It's a shame. The guy has blown what physical gifts God gave him. He has two brothers in the NFL, or he did. And, you know, obviously that's a lot of that is God-given talent. You know, that can't be taught. You can't coach that length at that weight. Nope, you can't. But, you know, there are a lot of temptations, and you know, I feel bad for Daniel Cormier, who ripped himself apart.
Yeah, that's the next thing. Like, you got to feel for DC here.
He lost the biggest fight of his career. You know, everybody saw how dejected he was about it, and then, you know, this happens, and, you know, his response was essentially, well, you know, I still lost the fight, which is true, but, you know, you didn't really lose the fight because the guy you're fighting was ineligible to fight.
Yeah, statistically, we might go back, and I'd imagine once everything, if it does get confirmed as most suspect, all that'll change to a no contest, and DC will get his belt back, and he'll fight some more average light heavyweights to close out his career,
this is going to be this whole entire mess is going to be a long-term play. This isn't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. This isn't going to be sorted out anytime soon. There are going to be more tests, there are going to be appeals, you know, this story is not going away.
Yep, so this is something that we'll follow for, yes, many months, years to come here. But for now, let's look ahead to Saturday, where we've got UFC 215 in Edmonton. It's a pretty solid card. We got two title fights on the line. So those of you waiting since that Jones fight back on July 29th to get your UFC fix, here we are. John, we're going to start in the main event, kick it off right from the top. We've got Demetrius Johnson against Ray Borg. Now, the UFC has essentially ran out of opponents for Johnson, and Borg's kind of the closest guy as far as someone who he hasn't beaten yet. We ran through all that controversy with Mighty Mouse and TJ Dillashaw, him not wanting to make that fight happen. Could maybe still see it down the road here, but in the meantime, he's going to defend his title in his natural weight class at 125, and he is a massive Vegas favorite. We used to talk about Rousey numbers, Cyborg numbers. Johnson checks in at minus 1,200, Ray Borg a plus 700 dog. DraftKings, Johnson is $3,000 more, highest priced guy on the slate at $9,600. Borg, $6,600, so it's essentially punting a roster spot if you have to do that. And the odds to finish of this are about minus 140, so expecting a finish, but no lock for a finish. John, can anybody beat Mighty Mouse in the 125-pound division, regardless of if it's Borg or anyone else?
Yeah, somebody can, but I'd be lying if I told you who that guy is. Just like I didn't, you know, he's the best, Mighty Mouse is the best pound fighter in the world. The only guy really in the conversation with him was the guy we were just talking about, and that's John Jones, who has essentially now disqualified himself.
Mm-hmm. At least an asterisk there.
yeah, this is the best fighter in the world. He does everything perfectly, from his grappling to his cardio to his striking. His technique is outstanding. 12 wins in a row. The only flyweight champion in UFC division history. And, you know, the list of guys he's beaten, like you said, is everybody. He has cleaned out the division. And Ray Borg is a good young fighter, but he's a young fighter who has a history of missing weight a couple times in his UFC career. And that is a huge, huge risk when you put a guy like that in a title fight.
Yes, you mentioned that in your preview. So, you know, he's going after that Anderson Silva title defense record here. But, of course, if Ray Borg doesn't make weight, as he has missed weight in the past, it's not a title defense anymore.
Oh, it's not. Borg will become ineligible to win the belt if he misses weight. And I guess it's one of two things. Either the UFC is 100% confident he's going to make weight, which I find hard to believe given his past, or they just had no other answers, and I think it's more the latter. There's just nobody for this guy to fight anymore. Yeah. You can only run back, you know, rematches so many times before people say, you know, I'm not doing this anymore. And we've talked about this in the past. This is why Demetrius Johnson, despite being the best pound fighter in the world, does not draw big numbers, because he has nobody, he has no competition.
Mm-hmm. It's very hard to market to an audience the even slight possibility that Johnson might get beat, because he's so technically sound, footwork. He beat Wilson Hayes at his own game by submitting him. I mean, he's just rolled over everybody.
He has, and you know, the other two factors are, one, smaller guys don't draw like heavier guys. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, although he's gotten better in this area, you know, Mighty Mouse is not the most proficient self-marketer. And by that, I mean, he's not a big talker. You know, he's not the ever-present presence on television and websites and all this stuff that some of the other champions are. And when I say that, I don't mean you have to be Conor McGregor, who's over the top. Mm-hmm. But, you know, do something to get yourself noticed and drum up some interest. And all he doesn't do that. And, you know, that doesn't mean he's not the best pound fighter in the world, because he is. But it affects the casual fans' interest in him. And as we've said on here before also, if you're looking at odds of main events that are up in the Rousey range, you know, the minus 1,000, 1,100, 1,200, that means the fight probably shouldn't be made. You know, mm-hmm. that when you get to numbers that look like that, it tells me that there was no better option as far as a challenger. You're going to tell me there's not one, because even if it was, whether it was another fight with Henry Cejudo, whether it's another fight with Joseph Benavidez, whatever, neither of those guys would be minus 1,000. You know, mm-hmm. DJ would be minus 600, whatever you want to say, but they wouldn't be up in the minus 1,000 range, which tells me that the UFC just, they decided they had nothing else. And the other, and they had to try and make a card here on a pay-per-view. And they thought Borg was their best option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the thing is here, let's shift our discussion to fantasy a little bit, because we're both picking Johnson. I'd be shocked if anyone didn't pick him in our staff picks article, but it's okay. So Johnson's 9,600 on DraftKings. You're making 10 fantasy lineups for Saturday. Does any single one of them feature Borg, or are you just deciding, okay, maybe I'll fade Johnson in a couple of those, even if you need a salary relief punt play, like you call it in football sometimes? I mean, is there any incentive to not use Johnson outside of his cost, maybe?
Well, the reason, I'll tell you right now, the reason I wouldn't use Borg is because he has no power in his hands. He has two knockouts in his entire career. One of them came early on, I believe is his third fight. So the odds of Borg getting a knockout win are, and I think the way to beat Johnson, if you ever do beat him, is to hit him with that one punch. I see zero chance that Borg is going to outpoint Johnson over any extended period of time.
Yeah. And looking at the numbers, Borg lands just 1.5 significant strikes per minute, and that's, you know, that's half of what Johnson can land. Right. So let's say hypothetically the fight goes into the third, fourth, fifth round. If Borg's cardio can hold up after what's going to be a very tough weight cut, even if it gets that far, you know, the significant striking numbers are not going to be significant enough to even get you 40 or 50 DraftKings points. So I'm just not quite seeing it.
No, and part of Borg's low striking total are the fact that he's always grappling, you know. So mm-hmm. if that's your game. You're not going to have as high a striking total. But even Borg's takedown, he averages over 3 takedowns a fight. But look at TJ, 3.4, you know, even higher. And Johnson is not what you would – Johnson is a complete mixed martial artist. And, look, somebody's going to beat Johnson eventually somehow. You know, nobody thought Cody Garbrandt would ever beat Dominic Cruz. And I said Cruz, John Jones, and DJ are the 3 guys I will pick until they lose. Cruz lost. Jones hasn't lost, but he's kind of lost, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And Johnson essentially is the one left standing. And somebody's going to shock him one day because, you know, nobody is invincible in this sport. But good luck trying to figure out who that is because the guy has no holes in his game.
Yeah, I'm guessing the person that beats Johnson is not on the UFC roster yet. Unless they convince Johnson by waving a lot of money at him to take a fight at 135 where he absolutely has no incentive and has been, of course, very resistant to the idea in the first place, I wouldn't be surprised if the person who may eventually challenge him isn't even on the roster yet just because he's in his prime and he is dominant and I don't see him losing anytime soon.
No, you know, somebody will come out of nowhere. Somebody always does, but... You know, nobody can accurately predict who that's ever going to be.
Yeah, so that's a tough one. So we both agree. I mean, if you made a lineup already for Saturday, are you kind of featuring Johnson just because of it's such a lock, or are you looking to some of the guys, some of the favorites that are cheaper salaries to go for something more balanced?
You could do both. As we say on here, you know, it's important to make multiple lineups because you stack everything, you know, with essentially the same guys and. You know, one or two guys have an off night and you're done. So it's important to make multiple lineups, but I certainly think even with his crazy salary that Johnson is more likely to return an investment than Borg.
Yeah, I think there's a couple maybe upset or at least live dog candidates on here. So I know my early lineups are usually featuring Johnson just because his ownership is going to be high and I don't want to miss out on that. So we'll kind of move on to that as we get through the show and talk about some more of these matchups here. But let's shift our focus to the co-main event, John. We got a women's bantamweight championship. This was supposed to go down at UFC 213, the International Fight Week event. Amanda Nunes had some weight cutting issues, ended up having to withdraw from, actually, I don't even think it was weight cutting. I think it was an illness and she had to withdraw or she was in the hospital, so she took some heat from Dana White. He kind of threw his champ under the bus, but this fight is rebooked now, and just like the first time through, the salaries, odds, all of that are quite identical. In fact, they have identical salaries on DraftKings, both 8,100, so there's possible room here to help fit one of those favorites in because the average you get per fighter is just over 8,300. So if you do choose to get a piece of this fight, where the odds to finish are -240, so a decent chance that it gets finished here. So if you do choose to get a piece of this fight, you can maybe work out some other favorites in your lineup here. But Shevchenko, once again, is a slight betting favorite, right around -125, Nunes -105. I mean, it's really close to a pick 'em. John, you know, you picked Nunes in the first time we did this. Are you going Nunes again?
Yeah, I am, and I don't think a whole lot's changed. I think, if anything, I have more confidence in Nunes now than I do then. And that's not a knock on Shevchenko. These two fought in March of last year, 2016. Close fight. Both women did damage, but a unanimous decision for Nunes, which was the right call. And like you mentioned earlier, this fight was supposed to take place a little while back. And the whole situation is still a little cloudy. The gist of it was reported that Nunes was ill, as you mentioned. She said she couldn't fight. I believe doctors essentially could not, you know, they couldn't. I believe Dana White, at least, UFC President Dana White, thinks that Nunes was able to fight and she made this decision not to. White said after that, I believe he said that he would not book Nunes in a main event spot anymore. I believe he said that. As we know, Dana says a lot of stuff that change all the time.
He was never going to book John Jones in a main event either. And
so that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But Shevchenko is a Muay Thai specialist, but the difference is Nunes has more power. So there's not, like I said, there's not, as the odds and the salaries indicate, there's not a whole lot separating both women. I just think Nunes has a power advantage, but like the first fight went the distance. I think this could go the distance too. Very little separation. easily could go all 25 minutes. But I wouldn't be surprised if Shevchenko won. But I've seen enough from Nunes that I think she's the best 135 pounder in the women's 135 pounder in the world. And assuming this illness or whatever it was, you know, is nothing long term, and there's no indication that it is. You know, I think she wins, but again, very close. Mm-hmm.
I think if this fight goes to the championship rounds here, rounds 4 and 5, that it means a lot. It'll be better for Shevchenko because she has more, I guess, I don't want to say more experience in that. But Nunes hasn't quite been there, and there has been issues raised about her cardio in the past because she gets those quick finishes. However, when they're both 8,100, I think if there's going to be a knockout in this fight, Nunes has a much better chance to get it. That's why I make her she's in my DraftKings lineup. She's one of the fighters I'm using to fit Mighty Mouse in, and I think she's going to win. She's a bigger, longer fighter and much more power here. Better shot of getting you those bonuses rather than waiting it out for 5 rounds. Either way, these main event and co-main event being 5-round fights, I think it's very, very advisable to use someone from both of those fights if possible, because you get the extra couple of rounds to rack up points even if there is a finish, and especially this women's bantamweight championship. If you think Shevchenko's going to win, put her in your lineup. I think you and me are in agreement that Nunes will, and she'll be in our lineups, but this is a fight to get a piece of either way.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's very little difference. Shevchenko, I would certainly say, is the more technical striker of the two as far as placement combinations and that kind of stuff, and you know, I think Nunes hits harder. So if you think Shevchenko can outpoint Nunes because of her technique and her Muay Thai background, you know, then she's a good pick. There's not a whole lot of difference between the two, and I would agree that a longer fight probably favors Shevchenko later, but I will say that it looks like Nunes's cardio has gotten better. She's starting to, even though, you know, her last two fights, neither of them got out of the first round, but she appears to be, at least to me, in better shape as far as being able to fight for a long period of time. So, you know, we'll see. 25-minute fights, we talk about it all the time, but they don't happen often. You know, it's even if you're scheduled for 25, it doesn't always go that far. So we'll have to see. But again, a close fight that I expect to be close throughout. I would be very surprised if either woman pulled away from the other.
Yeah, absolutely. So this will be a good one to watch. Hopefully everything goes through this time, and we'll be able to see these two women fight. One of the best, I think, women's bantamweight championship fights that can currently be put on by the UFC, and also one worth working into your DraftKings lineups here. But John, we've got a former champion in the event leading up to this title fight here. This is a welterweight matchup that I want to switch to here. It's Neil Magny against Rafael Dos Anjos. Dos Anjos spent most of his career in the lightweight division, now moving up to welterweight, and he's a pretty big favorite in this fight. He's $1,000 more on DraftKings, checks in at 8,600, and Neil Magny is 7,600. Dos Anjos -190 in the sports books, Magny about +165. The odds to finish are +165, so Vegas actually likes this one going the full 3 rounds here. Who do you got in this fight, and what type of fight do you think it's going to be?
This is interesting because, as I said in our preview article, I am 100% convinced that Rafael Dos Anjos is a better MMA fighter than Neil Magny. But Magny has a massive size advantage.
It's crazy.
6 inches taller, a 10-inch reach advantage, which is, in this sport, is monumental. It's one of the things John Jones does best. He stands away from his opponents and batters his opponents, and he can hit you and you can't hit him. And it's a big, big advantage. And if Dos Anjos is able to get inside against Magny, I think he wins easily. He's a better grappler. I think relative to his size, he certainly has more power. But Magny has shown over the years, over and over and over again, that he can not only be competitive, but he can win fights that really, honestly, he has no business being in. I've picked against Magny countless times since, you know, we started covering MMA here on RotoWire, and he usually wins. Defeated Johnny Hendricks.
The Kelvin Gastelum one is the one that surprises me the most, because I think he's one of the better fighters in that division.
Oh yeah, he has serious wins. Johnny Hendricks, who's not what he was, but still, obviously, Hector Lombard, Gastelum, you know, Tim Means. He has legit wins under his resume. And a 6'3" guy fighting at welterweight is rare. That's a big guy for the division. So Dos Anjos is going to be giving away a whole bunch of size, but I think you agree with me. Dos Anjos is the better fighter. Now, that doesn't, as we know in this sport, that doesn't always mean that you win, but he has more ways to win. You know, he's a really, really high-level Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. And if he's able to negate the size advantage of Magny, you know, I don't think this is close. But Magny is a smart fighter who... You talk about some guys who refuse to tailor their game plan to their opponents. You know, Magny is one of those guys who will. He will do what's necessary to win. I'm sure him and his entire team at Elevation MMA in Colorado will have a game plan for him to use his size and his length to his advantage. And if he does that, you know, he has a chance. And this is given the talent level of the two guys, this is closer than it probably should be. I'm going to take Dos Anjos because, you know, I always believe in betting on talent, but Magny is a liver underdog than he probably should be.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that it's a close fight. And Dos Anjos, yeah, he's probably the better fighter here, but this is one where we're finally going to have some parity, and I'm going to go ahead and take Neil Magny in this one. This was one of the hardest ones that I personally had to pick, but he's one of the guys I like for an upset just because of the size difference. Dos Anjos, a lot more experience, some more quality opponents on that resume, but not much experience at welterweight so far, and I think the size difference is going to be very tough to overcome. Now, Neil Magny, striking-wise, offensive and defensive striking, has Dos Anjos beaten in every statistical category. It's the exact opposite in the grappling department, but I think Magny will find a way to use that length to his advantage, and I think he's going to surprise some people on Saturday night. We've got someone who's kind of coming up, ready to take on some of the best welterweights, whereas Rafael Dos Anjos needs some wins, or, you know, he's going to be kind of fading into obscurity. He's got to go up at this heavier weight class now. You know, maybe that's too harsh, or, you know, fading into obscurity. But I just think that this is a good chance where a lot of people are going to be down on Magny, and it's a good chance to get someone for $7,600 in your DraftKings lineup that has a pretty good chance to win. He helps you lock in someone like Mighty Mouse. And I found, you know, when I was playing around, not only can you get Mighty Mouse in your lineup, but I found a few fighters, some more that we'll talk about later on, where you could probably work in one more person over 9,000, another big favorite here. So, yeah, and Magny's part of the way I'm going to do that. And, you know, the odds to finish here are late. So, at the worst case scenario, we get hopefully a decent amount of significant strikes from Magny over that three rounds, and we get some points, so it's not a complete loss. But I'm going to take Magny in this one, and it's one that I'm on the fence about, that I'm probably the least confident out of all these picks that we're going to make. But in the end, I had to settle for the much, much bigger guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's close. You know, I can certainly see how Magny's size gives him an advantage that, if you go just based on background and ability, you know, probably isn't there. But, you know, he has shown that he can win fights and be competitive in fights that he probably shouldn't be there and shouldn't be competitive in. So he has a history of getting the job done, you know, with his back against the wall as an underdog. So, you know, it certainly would not be a surprise to see him do it again.
Yep, I don't think either of us would be shocked here. But, John, let's move on to the light heavyweight division, a division that's kind of a little bit in shambles now, of course, without John Jones for the foreseeable future. But anyway, this is, you know, kind of down towards the end of the rankings here. We've got a matchup between Alir Latifi and Tyson Pedro. Pedro's relatively new to the UFC, and he enters as the betting underdog as well as the lower salary fighter on DraftKings. Latifi's 8,500, Pedro's 7,700. Latifi minus 150, Pedro plus 110. One thing that jumps out here, odds to finish, they've been moving around a little bit, but they're pretty much over minus 400 wherever I look. So this seems like a pretty decent fight to include in your DraftKings lineup here. How do you see this one playing out?
This is hard to break down, and that's due to the inexperience of Tyson Pedro. He has 6 career fights, 2 in the UFC. He's never been out of the first round in his entire career, and in his 2 UFC fights, he has a submission win via rear naked choke and a TKO win. The question is really, do you have confidence in what little we've seen of Pedro that, you know, it's legit? The wins were not against terrific competition. He's fighting a guy in Latifi who is very strong for the division, short, stocky. But as we were talking about earlier in the Matt Santos fight,
lengthwise,
Pedro has a size advantage. He's 5 inches taller. Is a 6-inch reach advantage. So again, Latifi is far better than Khalil Roundtree or Paul Craig, which is who Pedro has fought. So I took, and this was a tough decision for me because you're going off what is virtually no real evidence of Pedro, or, you know, no real experience, 6 pro fights, and you know, he's already here on the spot of the main card of a pay-per-view. I took Pedro because I think when you take into account the fact that he's 7,700 as opposed to 8,500 for Latifi, that he's a better value play. But, you know, this is all about whether the dominance we've seen from Pedro in his brief UFC career is legitimate or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of this way. If you're playing in a cash game, your 50-50s, your head-to-heads, maybe you don't want to use Pedro because there is so much uncertainty. But if you're playing in one of those big GPPs or anything with a lot of entries that you have to be a little bit unique and pick a string of potential finishes, I think you have to take Pedro in that situation because it saves you $800. You know, Latifi has the smaller guy. We don't really... It's going to be tough to negate that length advantage. And Pedro, I mean... You said 2 UFC fights. He has 6 professional fights. All of them have been first round wins. You know, 3 of them rear naked chokes. 4 of the 6 are by submission. So you would think that Latifi, his advantage in something like this would be to pull someone like Pedro in closer, wrestle, grapple. But from the short sample size, Pedro's grappling has seemed to hold up just fine. Like we said, he hasn't been taken down yet. This will be the best opponent he's faced here. But I think it's 7,700 and a guy that's only plus 110 as far as the betting odds. So, you know, you can kind of track where the money's going in that a little bit. I think you're right in this one, John, in a sense where if you're playing fantasy, you got to go Pedro. And I think you and I are both going to go this upset route.
Yeah, I mean, and Latifi is very strong. He's short for the division, but, you know, he's powerful, and he can certainly win. But, you know, you're looking for a real dominant opponent. You know, he's not that guy. He, you know, he's an above-average light heavyweight, but, he's not a top-tier guy. And I think this sets up well for a potential upset.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's one more fight we got to talk about on the main card here, John. It's a featherweight matchup. It seems to have a little fight of the night potential here, and that's Jeremy Stephens against Gilbert Melendez. Melendez, you may recognize him from UFC Tonight broadcasts on Fox Sports 1. He's a veteran of the sport, been in one of the greatest UFC fights of all time in his all-out war with Diego Sanchez. Crazy fight. If you got Fight Pass, go back and watch that just to get you jacked up for the start of this card. But DraftKings has these guys stacked up very evenly. Jeremy Stephens, 8,200. Gilbert Melendez, 8,000. Vegas has it just about like a pick'em. Stephens about minus 120. Melendez minus 105. Both these guys can take a beating, so the odds to finish here are plus 160. Despite a little bit of rust here, do you think Melendez can return to his old form?
I don't know if he's going to return to his old form in the sense that, you know, he's going to be in the title picture, former Strikeforce lightweight champion, WEC champion. You know, I don't know if he's ever going to get to that level again, but, you know, he hasn't won a fight. He's won one fight, I should say, the Diego fight, under the UFC banner, which is difficult to believe. Since the Strikeforce, you know, WEC, UFC all joined together, Gilbert Melendez is 1-4, which is hard to believe. And all the losses, obviously, there are 2 split decisions in there. You know, they've all been against quality opponents. But Gilbert tested positive for PEDs. He sat out a year, and he struggled to get on track in his last fight last July against Edson Barboza. So, he's looking at, you know, the better part of 15 months off. So, and Jeremy Stephens is... you want a guy who's going to give you a wake-up call when you get as soon as you get in the octagon, that's the guy. I would say Stevens hits harder, but this is two guys who make their money by going out there and banging. Aggressive guys who are always moving forward. And, you know, I think the winner here is the guy whose chin holds up. But I think Gilbert, I think there's more to Gilbert than we've seen of late. And, you know, he's 35 years old, so I don't expect him to get back to the top of the division like he was at one point. But I think he has more to offer than we've seen in his brief UFC career. But, you know, Stevens is another guy who 1-3 in his last four fights needs a win. Two guys who badly need a win with little separation. And, you know, I think the winner of this is going to be the guy who survives as opposed to the guy, you know, who thrives.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, absolutely. I'm having a very tough time picking a 35-year-old that's 1-4 in his last five fights. Now, granted, those were excellent competition for Gilbert Melendez, but I'm gonna take the younger, fresher guy that, like you said, hits a little bit harder. Melendez, you mentioned the 1 year suspension in the past. Again, he's had another long layoff. He hasn't fought for 13 months. His last fight was July 23rd. He hasn't won a fight since October 2013. I mentioned that Sanchez fight earlier, so it's been a while since he's won. I'm a little bit concerned about ring rust. I'm a little bit concerned about overall confidence. You know, he can't use any type of PED or anything close to it with the new USADA rules. I just don't see him winning this fight, and I'm a little bit surprised that the odds are as close as they are. So this is one where we can agree to disagree, and it'd be a good if we were playing head-to-head this week, John, it would probably be the deciding factor in our DraftKings lineups here.
Yeah, I mean, I took Melendez. I'm not confident about it. Mm-hmm. There is, again, and there are a couple fights on the main card like this, very little separation. Mm-hmm. And
very tough card to pick.
Yep, and those, you know, those are the kind of fights you want because they allow you to make multiple lineups, and that's what you're looking for, you know, as an owner, you know, making cases that either guy can win. But, you know, like you said, Melendez is older. Both guys are struggling. Melendez hasn't fought. You know, there's red flags both ways. So, mm-hmm. If you're a believer that Stevens' power, and I think he hits harder, you know, can come through, then he's a good play. And Gilbert is the guy who gets hit. So, you know, I'd be willing to listen on Stevens. There's not much separation.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you're taking one of these guys in your lineups. Maybe you're probably getting that co-main event. You still are probably going to need a little bit of salary relief somewhere in your DraftKings lineup, especially if you are working in Mighty Mouse. Now, we both have a couple of plays. If you don't mind, John, I want to start with one that I found a little bit confusing, and I want to see if maybe you can help me explain this. But there's a fight lower on the card, Alex White against Mitch Clark. Alex White, 7,400. He's 1,400 less than Clark. Yet Vegas has him anywhere from a minus 180 to minus 190 betting favorite here. And that's very rare. Almost always the Vegas odds coincide with the DraftKings salary. I saw in your column that you picked Clark. Is this one too close to call for you? Or is this kind of, I don't know, is this one of those things where maybe DraftKings doesn't have the salaries quite right? Or is Mitch Clark better than Vegas is giving him credit for? I'm having a tough time seeing this one because White's a taller, younger fighter with better striking stats in terms of volume, accuracy, and defense. Neither do a ton of grappling. Clark's big advantage is in Canada, I guess, if you can count that as hometown. But I'm having a tough time for the reasons and salary here.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the reason I picked him. You know, in close fights where there's seemingly little separation, you know, you start looking at little things, and I would never make a pick straightly based off this, but when you get into a fight and you're running the numbers where, you know, there's not much situation, little things like, you know, a hometown advantage are something to look at. But I was really impressed, and it's going back a while now, but I was really impressed with Clark's submission win over Ally Aquinta. You know, it's over 3 years ago now, but he proved to me in that fight that he could win a fight, not only win a fight, but win a fight in a way not many people expected against a really tough fighter. Now, the issue for Clark recently has been inactivity. You know, he's fought once in 2015, once in 2016. He's going to fight once in 2017. So he fights once a year, and a little over a year of time, 14, 15 months in between. But his last two fights, Michael Chiesa, Joe Duffy, two really talented opponents, and he didn't look good in either of them. But I think there's more here. But again, black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, spending time with Jackson Wink, you know. But again, this is when you're looking for stuff like this, there's really not a whole lot of separation. On the undercard, it's hard when it's you get guys with limited experience. It's tough to take underdogs for me more so than the main card, simply because you don't have a lot of evidence to go off of, you know, a background, so to say. But again, White is definitely one live underdog. The other underdog that I like, that I think, even though I don't think he's going to win, that's a really good salary, is the guy we talked about earlier, and that's Wilson Hayes. $7,100, you know, for a guy who was obviously, you know, obliterated by Mighty Mouse recently, but everybody's obliterated by Mighty Mouse.
Yeah, both him and his opponent, Henry Cejudo, both have been stopped by Mighty Mouse, so yeah. It's interesting to see.
Cejudo's really good, obviously. One of the, you know, probably the second or third best lightweight, flyweight in the world, but Wilson Hayes is also a really, really good fighter. Strong, powerful, and he's an understandable underdog, and he deserves to be an underdog, but you know, you're looking for a risk-reward thing at this point, and for somebody with Hayes' talent level, $7,100 is a really low salary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you in that sense because, okay, Cejudo's $9,100. If you have that much money to spend, I know there's a whole lot of unknown here, but this guy Adriano Martins is $9,000. I almost like him better than Cejudo because he's almost a minus 400 favorite. That's huge. He did lose his last fight, but in the two of the three fights before that, he scored over 100 DraftKings points. So maybe I'm going, if I have that much money left, and chances are you might not if you pick Mighty Mouse, but you know, kind of going away because I think that you know, Cejudo has a better chance of losing than this other guy here, Martins. So just something to think about. You have to do this multiple different ways when you're making your DraftKings lineups. But one thing I always have up is all the odds and all the movement right next to my DraftKings lineup and try to look for those things that stand out.
Yeah, I mean, there, you know, there's no set right way to do this. You know, you kind of just have to weigh the risk and reward, and like you said, try different things. You know, there is nothing, you know, upsets happen in this sport all the time. Every single card has a handful of upsets, so you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket because, you know, the odds of straight favorites running the board are, you know, are slim to none.
All right, real quick, John, I mentioned mine already because it's that first one of that of the pay-per-view card, the Stevens-Melendez. I think that has fight of the night potential written all over it, the way that those two guys brawl and the chins that they've shown throughout their career. What's the fight, either just call it the best fight or just the fight you're most excited for?
I want to see the Magny Dos Anjos fight because I don't know how the difference in styles is going to play out. I don't know. I'm interested to see how much Magny's length impacts the fight. You see some fights where there's a tall, long fighter like that, and he totally controls the pace of the fight because of his length. And then you have other matchups like that where the shorter guy easily gets inside against him, and it's no issue at all. So it's, you know, that's one I want to see. And even though it doesn't feature the big names that some of the other fights does, I'm interested to see Tyson Pedro because he's looked brilliant in his brief UFC career, and, you know, a fight against Latifi will, you know, give us an idea of if he's a real legitimate threat or not moving forward in the light heavyweight division.
Yeah, absolutely. So that'll be something that we'll finally get some clarity and we'll have a little bit better analysis for you, I guess, next time he's out there. But we both agree that he's a live dog, and you need some of those to get Mighty Mouse in your lineup here. Well, that's going to wrap things up for today's edition of the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. Once again, John, thanks for joining me. You can follow John on Twitter at John Litterine. You can follow me at JakeSki52. John, interim titles are back again because UFC 216 is Ferguson versus Lee on October 7th here, so we've got that to look forward to at least.
We do. UFC's favorite thing these days, interim titles.
Mm-hmm. Someone's got to fight McGregor eventually at some point. But hey, thanks again for listening, folks, and good luck with your DraftKings lineups this weekend.
All right, thanks.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.